Tribeca,
the podcast for London lovers, Anglophiles and critical believers. RevLab.
Guten Tag, liebe Podcast-Hörer und Hörerinnen und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von «More Tea-Wicker». Ich bin Carla Maurer, Pfarrerin an der Schweizer Kirche in London. Und ich rede mit Leuten, die im Grossstadtdschungel leben und überleben und die mich als Pfarrerin und unsere Schweizer Kirche prägen. Heute rede ich mit einem alten Bekannten. Der Laurin Redding ist zurück. Der Laurin und ich haben in der ersten Folge zusammen unseren Lieblingsort in London besucht und die britische Hauptstadt näher zu euch gebracht. Bis Corona ist gekommen. Heute nimmt der Laurin uns wieder mal auf ein London-Türli mit. Und zwar geht sie in den Stadtteil mit dem unaussprechbaren Namen Marylebone. Der Laurin erzählt uns Geschichte und Geschichten von dem Quartier im Westen von London. Wir treffen auf den Sherlock Holmes, den Madame Tussauds, ihre Wachsfiguren, aber auch auf ein paar wunderschöne Perke, sogar private, wo man nur mit einem speziellen Schlüsselzugang hat. Marylebone ist für die Schweizer Community in London ganz speziell wichtig, weil dort unsere Schweizer Botschaft steht. Auf der Botschaft hatte Laurin seine erste Londoner Arbeitsstelle. Er erzählt uns ein paar Geheimnisse. Zum Beispiel, was im Keller der Botschaft für Kunstschätze versteckt sind. Aber auch, wieso am Tag nach der Brexit-Abstimmung die Feuerwehr kommen musste. Ich weiss, dass viele London-Liebhaber und Liebhaberinnen die britische Hauptstadt vermissen. Und ich kann euch sagen, wir vermissen London auch. Aber London kommt wieder zurück. Von dem bin ich überzeugt. Und auf diesen Tag freue ich mich wie ein kleines Kind. Auf geht's jetzt nach Marylebone. Welcome everyone. For those who have been listening to this podcast from the very beginning, this person is no stranger. Laurin is back. Hi, Laurin.
Hi.
Laurin and I have been visiting our favorite places in London for the early episodes of this podcast, which of course you can still listen to if you want. But then the pandemic restrictions forced us to stay at home. We know that many people miss London. Those who come as tourists or visitors or, of course, friends and family who like to visit here. But we can tell you we miss it too, because it really is not quite the same nowadays as we're used to. So we thought we'd bring Laurin back to take us on a journey today. And today, Laurin is taking us to an area in London that many visitors find impossible to pronounce. It's not Marylebone, it's not Marylebone, it is Marylebone. And he's also taking us to the place where he first worked when he came to London, and that's the Swiss Embassy. But first, Laurin, I have another question for you. You have been travelling forth and back between the UK and Switzerland quite a bit during the pandemic and with all the restrictions. So how many days have you actually spent in quarantine?
Oh gosh, I haven't counted them all, but it must have been months, because it's always 10 days and it used to be 14 days. If you add that all up, I must have spent at least 3 months in quarantine in 2020.
That's quite a bit. And how? Tell us a bit about this experience. How is it quarantining so much?
You get used to it, honestly. The thing is, now in London, it doesn't really make a difference anymore. I mean, you have to stay indoors anyway, apart from you can go on a walk, which you then can't when you're quarantining. But, you know, you really enjoy the little things. I'm sure I'm not the only one. You do lots of cooking, you're watching things, lots of reading and home exercise. You know, you use every little corner of your house and of the internet that you can find.
Give us some examples. What do you cook? What do you read? What do you watch?
So we travel the world by cooking almost. You know, we think like, what country, what culinary corner of the world have we not made yet? And then we do that.
What's your favorite?
My favorite? Oh my God. I mean, one of the best things is just to do lots of different curries and dals. And, you know, you can just use lots of different vegetables, very flavorsome, very warm as well. Now in the winter quarantine, it's much, much needed to have some warmth in the house as well by making amazing warm food.
Because you're, of course, a vegetarian cook, aren't you?
Yeah. Curries are just the best for that.
You can chuck everything in there.
And I have to admit, though, there are in some weak moments, you know, when you don't quite have the energy, it's not always as fun. Order a curry in as well. The amazing thing about London, despite lockdown and quarantine and everything, you can still have all the food in the world just one click away.
Yeah. And then you have also some storage devices with all these plastics in which the food comes in. That's really good to store some vegetables, like put them in the fridge.
Yeah. Or in the freezer, we found out as well, actually. You can freeze so many things. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of those in the freezer. Yeah, freezing is a big thing in our house now. We even freeze milk. It's really handy.
Oh, yes. Same here. Never done this before. It must be a London thing.
Yeah, probably. Books, films, TV series, anything interesting that you can recommend?
You know, like Netflix has its limits, but the good thing in England, you have the BBC and also Channel 4, and they do amazing series based on real stories. So the one I've seen recently is It's a Sin. I don't know whether you've heard of it.
I heard of it, but yeah, not familiar with it.
Or Small Axe. They are both a series of films and shows, and they treat different things. So in It's a Sin, it's about the gay community and the AIDS pandemic in the UK and in the 80s. And in Small Axe, it's about racism and race relations in England in the last decade. So, you know, they are sometimes hard to watch, but they are really, really interesting just to, you know, to learn about the history and to understand this country better. And they're really good quality as well. I mean, it's great cinema.
Oh, look out for it. We're almost through with our series, so we have to choose next one anyway. We're almost through with Bloodline. I don't know if you watched it.
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's crime drama and a lot of family psychology and sibling dynamics. Quite interesting.
I think the trick is to find a good balance, because Small Axe and It's a Sin and series like that, they are quite heavy. So sometimes, you know, I also go for a more light television.
Yeah. So you're traveling forth and back. Has that to do as well with your job? Because you've been working remotely before everything with the pandemic started, right? Your team is in Switzerland.
Yeah. So I'm kind of going in between because, my team's in Switzerland, but I'm also the UK link. You know, with Brexit, there's a lot of things that we need to sort out. It's about exchange and mobility, you know, school exchange, university exchange, etc. So I've been going back and forth because of work as well. And that, of course, wasn't made easy with all these restrictions. I've tried to do what I could. And, you know, my main learning was I just have to take every day as it comes. You can't really plan ahead anymore. You have to just stay flexible. And I think that's actually something that is incredibly helpful just for your whole life, in any life situation, to be open-minded and flexible and not too stuck in the plans can actually be really helpful, especially for me.
Why are you generally a person who is?
You know, when the plan changes last minute, I didn't like that at all. But now I think I get used to it much more.
So you had to learn to swim.
It's a great learning experience for me personally, yeah.
Yes. So let's go to that place with the tongue-twisting name, Marylebone, and maybe just let's go to the Swiss embassy first, because I think that's a really important place for the Swiss community where many of us go and know, like for social events or if we need a passport or have any other things that we need as Swiss citizens. And I think also for like visitors from Switzerland, quite interesting to know where our embassy is. And you work there. So tell us a bit more about the embassy and also about the work you've done there.
Yeah, so the Swiss embassy is in the middle of Marylebone, which you pronounce very well, by the way. I'm very impressed. I had to practice a lot. And all these embassies, they're always like in similar places. So you don't only have the Swiss embassy, you have the Swedish embassy, you have the Angolan embassy. They're all in that same neighborhood. My work there was in the economic section. So I was doing a lot of analysis of the economic data of the Swiss-UK relationship. Also lots of events of the embassy. That's also part of the diplomatic life. So it was quite an interesting time. And of course, you know, when you work in an office, you get to know the neighborhood as well. And that's why I decided to take us to the West End this time. I have a lot of memories in that area and I became quite curious about its history as well.
Brilliant. You'll tell us more about this. Do you want to become a diplomat?
Potentially. I've tried once, but didn't work. Maybe I'll try again. Who knows? I'm really interested in the work or in international politics, but and then diplomacy, of course, would be one way to do that. But there's also other ways.
Any words about Brexit with your experience at the embassy?
I think if you look at the long term view of the world, with the major global challenges there are with climate change, etc., the only way really to solve them is to work together, to coordinate, to be in bigger units, as, you know, think of Europe as one. And it doesn't work if every country just does it something by itself. And we've seen the same in a pandemic as well. And therefore, I think might be a move in the wrong direction if you think of the challenges ahead in the next centuries. Same story for Switzerland, really. Huh? We can't just be isolated. We're integrated in this globalized world. Doesn't really work if we close ourselves off.
Let's then take a stroll through Marylebone. I just let you lead us. Where do you want to take us? And what's so interesting about that area?
First of all, I'm really happy that we're going back out there, even if it's only mentally. But I mean, I myself, and I think you must feel the same, we really miss going around the city and, you know, seeing these different places. Marylebone, what I love so much about it is that it's quite, there's so many different things to discover in diversity within a very small area. So around the embassy, you can go all the different directions and find very different things. So when you go out, you go for lunch. So you walk around, and when you go towards the east, you can find like an amazing, authentic Italian restaurant with like really old Italians who serve you the most delicious tiramisu. If you go south, maybe you've been there as well, there's the roti chives, amazing Indian street food. The person who runs it is related to someone in the embassy as well. That's why we all know about it.
That's why all the embassy staff are at the roti chai, I see.
And if you go west, for example, you get to Edgware Road. You know, you walk 5 minutes and you feel like you're in the middle of the Middle East with hundreds of Lebanese, Syrian restaurants, cafes and shops. You hear Arabic up and down the street. When I worked there, I went to all these directions. And also, of course, find which one is the best falafel of the hundreds of places that are up and down Edgware Road.
Yeah, so you ordered in Arabic when you had the opportunity.
Yes, I thought I have to take this opportunity to practice some, even though I got some weird looks and maybe some English replies sometimes. But I mean, that's the only way to learn a language. You have to try.
Yeah. How did you even work in the afternoon after all these lunches?
You get used to it. Yeah, it's part of diplomatic life. You eat a lot in like different events and then you work in the afternoon. But a good coffee always does it. We, of course, have Swiss coffee on the Swiss embassy.
Moving on from food, where else can you take us in Marylebone?
An important part of British work life is, used to be, not anymore now, sadly, was the after-work drinks. You know, the classic Führerhofer beer. We all had the local pub as well. For the embassy, was the Royal Oak. I don't know whether that's still the case anymore, but it was also a five-minute walk from the embassy. And every Friday night, a couple of us or a group of us would go there. Over time, I feel like we've done everything there. You know, we said goodbye to colleagues who were leaving. I celebrated my birthday there once. But when we had a successful event, we went there afterwards to relax. And so it's a very essential part also for us. And that's one of the things I loved about working there as well. You know, we had our local pub and could really build these relationships and have a great time. That's what I really miss in this pandemic as well.
The pub, yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a local pub at the Swiss church as well?
Yeah, we have the Cross Keys. The building is listed 2-star, I think. So on the Denkmalschutz, quite high, is a beautiful old pub with old, like, red carpets and loads of stuff on the wall. It's one of the oldest and probably most traditional pubs in Covent Garden. That's in Endell Street, so that's, yeah, really very close. I miss it a lot. We have a little pub corner now in our house. We made a little pub corner. So we can occasionally, when we decide like, oh, let's not watch TV tonight, let's go to the pub. So we sit in this little corner with bar stools and we have this, like, you know, the little mat you put on a bar, the fabric one, the long one that you find in the pubs that soak up the beer.
Did you steal that from a pub? How did you find that?
No. Now you can actually buy them.
Right.
Yeah. No, we have a few glasses in our cupboard, of course, who were unlawfully taken away from a pub.
I don't think I know anyone who hasn't once in their life taken a glass with them from the pub by accident or by choice or who knows, in the confusion of it all.
What about the history of Marylebone? What can you tell us?
Yeah, so actually you can see it in when you walk around as well on an afternoon walk. It's really fascinating because it all started as an ancient parish. I think the name hints to it as well. In the 12th century, it was the St. Mary Church, and it still exists today. It has a slightly different name. It's now the St. Marylebone Parish Church, but it's still there. And it's because it was on a small stream, you know, a little river called Tyburn. So you have Mary and Burn, and then used to be Marylebone, and somehow it ended up having a L-E in there as well. It's probably like French allusion to it. Another story is that it was maybe Mary the Good in French, Marie la Bonne. No one really knows. I found the different stories, but at the end, it all turned into Marylebone. As you know, I struggled with pronouncing it as well. It's one of those things, you know, in English, there's no way of knowing how a word sounds when you read the letters. There's no logic to it. You just have to hear it or learn it from someone. You know, when you think of like, what's that sauce called? Worcester sauce.
Oh, yeah.
No idea how you'd write that.
Or Leicester, like places like Leicester.
So back to the history. So when it was this parish church, you know, in the 12th century, of course, London wasn't that big. So this was very rural. There were some manors around, just nature and a few churches and houses. The city got bigger. There were bigger mansions here as well. And when you walk around Marylebone now, you can still see some of those. Have you been to these mews? So when you walk around Marylebone, you always come across these little back roads, very small streets sort of between the houses in the back.
Kind of a dead end road, isn't it?
It can be, but it can also go through. But they're often like quite hidden away and quite small. And they're called mews, M-E-W in English. And you always wondered, like, what is this? And they are incredibly well decorated now and have fancy houses. But when you walk through them, you think, that's a bit weird. Why are these all such small houses? You know, they're all very special. And I always wondered, and I once asked a few people, you know, what this really is. It connects to the history so well because there used to be the back of the big houses. There used to be the courtyard where the stables and the carriages were. You know, in that time, you know, you hid away behind the house where also the servants used to live. And now it's completely the opposite. You know, nowadays, it completely turned around. This is now where the most richest people live, in these old stables behind the big houses.
Yeah, they're so beautiful.
And they are so beautiful. So I can only recommend, when you walk around Marylebone for a little stroll, you walk through these mews, and it's absolutely beautiful to see. And then when you think of the history, I find really fascinating also how it like completely changed from servants' quarters to now really rich people's houses. My first memory of London. So when in secondary school, I went to Canterbury, which is in Kent, you know, where the cathedral, the archbishop reside, for a few weeks to learn English. And one weekend we went to London and we went to Marylebone, and in fact to the Madame Tussauds. I don't know whether you've been, it's a bit cliche. I've never been since secondary school, but that is my first memory of London. And that's also part of Marylebone, in that corner where Baker Street is as well.
And Baker Street is, of course, where the famous Sherlock Holmes lives, and you can still see his house.
Absolutely, the most famous detective of the world. Do you remember the address of the house?
No.
He used to live at 221B Baker Street. So for all the Sherlock Holmes fans who read the stories or watched any of the series that they made, you can still find that address there. And it's very near Madame Tussauds, just up on Baker Street.
It's a little museum, isn't it? Or is the museum in that house?
The museum is now in the house, but actually it's all a lie.
No, don't tell me that. No, because I have to tell you a story before you tell me lies. I was a big Sherlock Holmes fan and as a child. And I remember I went to Interlaken one with my parents, and to that gorge where Sherlock Holmes was, and there was some drama going on. Anyway, I was a big fan. So I wrote a letter to Sherlock Holmes when I was 11 years old, and I received a letter back. Now you're telling me that's all lies?
Well, the address might be definitely a lie. Don't know about the rest. I mean, I read all the stories when I was young as well. I loved it as well. I didn't go that far to write him a letter, but if you wrote it to 221B Baker Street, that might be a hint that it could have not been real. So Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who was the author, he used to live around there as well, in that area, in Marylebone. So he must have known Baker Street. But at the time when he published the first story, Baker Street was not long enough. It didn't go to 221 even. You know, there weren't that many houses. It was old times. So the street was only shorter. So 221B didn't even exist.
So that letter I received wasn't actually from Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's the end of an illusion.
I'm really sorry to tell you now. Your childhood memories are all a lie. What was your question? What reply did you get to the letter? Do you remember?
I don't remember what I said, no. There was like a really nice letterhead, and it was really nicely done, but I don't have it anymore, I don't think so.
Well, it is a fascinating part of life. Also a good BBC series, if you're a big fan of the stories.
And you like parks?
Yes.
You're a big fan of parks, aren't you? Because in every area in London, you will find parks. So what's the park situation in Marylebone?
So there's two. So that's, of course, you know, in the summer when you're in the embassy also, want to go for a quick walk or a picnic in the park. And you've got great options. So you've got Regent's Park to the north, you know, that really big, beautiful one with the nice, really well-kept rose corners and ponds where you can go for really long runs and walks. And in the south, you've got Hyde Park, where lots of sports going on. And in between, I'm not sure whether I should tell this, might be a secret. Well, anyway, in the middle of this all, which I've never seen other than in London either, little small private parks. So just next to the embassy, there are two parks. Let me think whether I can think of the name. But basically, they are gated. So you can only go in the park if you have a key.
And who's got that key?
And the only people who have the key, well, I'm not entirely sure who else has the key, but it's only the residents and people who live around that square are allowed to go in or can go in.
So you have to make friends with the residents in order to get into that park.
Yes, but the Swiss embassy had a key as well. So I don't know why we had that key. I mean, we weren't far, but we were almost neighbors. That was, for me, first, I thought that was so strange. You know, why would you have a private park that you can't just walk through? And then I really appreciated it because you have so much calm, you know, it's really well kept, maintained. And if you want to go for a quick picnic, it's perfect in the summer.
Oh, that's amazing. So like the embassy has a key to those because like as residents or a residential organization, so any employee can get the key or...
Maybe it was the ambassador's private key, who knows, but I've definitely been in that park a few times.
Brilliant. There's actually something else about the embassy many people don't know that is a bit hidden away in the garage. I think we have talked about it before, but what's hidden away in that garage in the embassy?
There's a cultural treasure hidden in the garage. And I used to, when I came to work by bicycle, I used to put my bicycle in the garage. And every time in the morning, I would come by really famous street art. So if you don't go in there and you don't know, you think, oh, there's some graffiti on the wall. But there's not just graffiti by anyone, but by the most famous street artists of them all, Banksy. So you have original Banksy street art in the garage, hidden away from the public, a bit like the park. That must be worth a lot, and it's really cool street art as well. But you cannot go there unless you park your bicycle or your car at the embassy.
Secret street art, secret parks, that sounds like a good life.
It was quite a fun time, I must say. My expectation of an embassy was, oh, it's very grey and formal, and there's lots of receptions. And some of that is true, but it's also like we had a great time. We had a lot of fun, and there were funny moments, you know, in the middle of the Brexit times as well. So I remember, for example, one day, so the Swedish embassy is just across the street from the Swiss embassy, which is also quite funny when you think, you know, Switzerland and Sweden get confused a lot. It doesn't help that they're also on the same street. And I didn't work at the reception downstairs, but I'm sure there were many, many incidents where people were trying to find the Swiss embassy and went to the Swedish or the other way around. But I could see it from my office as well. And one moment I remembered, it was just after the Brexit referendum, just when it was decided that the UK would leave the EU. I looked out the window and I saw there were like fire engines coming in the fire brigade. And I saw that there's two flag poles on the Swedish embassy. One, of course, with the big Swedish flag, and one, because I think all European embassies have that, the European flag. And because it was so much wind that day, the European flag pole was about to fall off. So it was like already collapsed halfway and was about to fall onto the street. So they had to call the fire brigade. And I thought it was so ironic. And of course, we were all then having a good laugh with the Swedish colleagues as well. Just after Brexit Day, the European Union flag was about to fall off the embassy onto the street. There were lots of funny moments like this. And the Swedish colleagues were great as well.
Yeah, this is a great story to end, I think. Just for the very end of this episode, Laureen, what is your wish or hope for 2021?
Oh, I want to have a party. That's my main thing. I need some dancing, some party. I don't mind. It can be only a few people, but that's really what I miss, just to, you know, have fun and dance around.
Okay, as long as I'm invited, hopefully we can make that happen.
Let's do it. Yes, you're definitely invited.
Thank you so much for taking us to Marylebone today and for talking to me, and you'll be back soon.
Danke, dass ihr wieder reingelassen habt. Wir sind bald zurück mit neuen Folgen und weiteren spannenden Gästen. Bis dann, macht's gut und schaut zu euch. RevLab.